Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, not only do we finally have another category for the Oscars, though it's the wrong one, but we also have a first look at Deadpool 3. Oh, and our topic this week is Rosie, aka It's All About Love. Exciting and new. So come on aboard. Our hoes are waiting for you. I'm proud of that. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. I love you.
Amanda Sink. Oh, we don't love her. She's not here. Troy Heinrichs.
I'm just like, the plane. Because I didn't like the Love Boat.
Oh, boy.
I mean, technically, they were all the same show, weren't they?
I swear the Love Boat took them to Fantasy Island. That was the whole concept of that, right?
Oh, my God.
The crossover rep at some point.
No, that wasn't how it works at all. I love you too, John. And Amanda, love you too. And Troy, love you too.
I don't love Troy.
Wow.
Well, I know. I made John work hard last episode.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, it's because Amanda wasn't talking much again. I'm kidding.
Poor Amanda. She will be back next week. But I did listen, right? I wasn't here last week. So I thought I'm going to listen. You guys did a wonderful job. It was a very good episode. Oh,
thanks, guy.
Except.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
No,
there's this part at the beginning where you guys are talking about, oh, Aaron's not here. So thankfully we can finally have a conversation.
Oh, shit.
What do you think this is every week? Like, what do you think we're doing here?
Huh? That responding to your points of view and only your points of view.
Oh, really? What say you, Mr. Interrupt all the time? And, Mr. I've never met a punctuation mark in my actual sentence, John? Huh? What are you guys talking about? I'm pretty sure we converse.
What are punctuation marks again?
Exactly.
Yeah, it sounds like you're pontificating right now.
Yeah, hold on. Let me go ahead and get your soapbox before we go any further.
This is how I express my love.
Let's see how much dust. Oh, absolutely no dust on this soapbox for you.
God, I hope you fall off it.
Welcome back, boss man.
Boss man. It was nice listening to somebody else do the work. That was really fun.
You know, I hear Troy likes editing.
He loves it. And also pretty close to the topic. I mean, as written, it was close as a listener. I'm going, I'm not sure that they know what the topic is yet. Okay. And then you finally got there.
What was the topic?
Oh my God. That's just, that's just sad. Ugh.
I'm running out of room in this, the solid state drive. I call a brain at this point. I dump information as soon as I don't need it anymore.
Did you guys see that the Super Bowl, which is past, it's over, blah, 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 blah. But it had like 123 million viewers, second only to the moon landing in terms of U.S. broadcasts. They keep forgetting about FIFA, but whatever.
Did they actually like track it back then?
Every TV was watching it, if it was real.
Which wasn't, but okay.
No, it wasn't. They staged it on the bottom of the flat earth.
They did an amazing job with special effects. It was all computer animated. But, you know, to your point.
69. Yeah.
Right. Really, if somebody went back in time and redid it all. However, to your point, that was a really good, I really enjoyed that Super Bowl. It was probably the first one that I enjoyed in eons. What about you guys?
Because of Taylor.
I mean, that didn't hurt.
Jesus.
What was interesting about that Super Bowl was that the play that won the game at the end was the exact same play that Andy Reid did last year to win the game.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. The exact same play.
That was pretty great. Yeah, no, it was enjoyable. I really did enjoy it. I thought it was a very solid game. It's always nice when you can get together with friends and watch a game you don't care about.
Right. I spent the whole time on the phone with a friend watching it together, and we were watching together and just yelling and screaming and having a good time. The thing about, like, you know, you said, did I enjoy it more because of Taylor? I just sat there. Every time I saw Taylor show up, it was more like I enjoyed it because I knew that there was some freaking neckbeard out there pissed off that they had to look at her.
My friend's house, they actually had a Taylor counter, and they would actually update the Taylor counter.
Did they really?
She was on the screen. Yeah.
I was going to play a shot game every time I saw her, but I thought I'd go blind, and I don't really know.
I think she was playing a shot game.
She was. God bless her. People really were reacting, boy. They're probably mad that we're talking about it right now.
Like, oh, yeah, they probably are. They're like, but I think those people that are mad that we're talking about it right now, I don't think they realize we're making fun of them.
You heard the big story out of that was that there was no parking for her plane at the airport.
Oh, because
all the private jets were there. So she had to like fly somewhere else and then had to drive to the stadium.
Oh my. No, I didn't hear that tonight. I don't care.
All that NORAD tracking and time zone shifting and all that stuff, and it still came down to a cab.
All I know is I had dinner with a friend of mine who told me very wistfully and proudly that for the first time in his life, his daughter is excited to watch football with him. And I think that's awesome.
So, yeah, I think that's awesome too.
Yeah, it's good news. All right, well, we'll move on because football's over. Thank God for all. But the Oscars are not yet. And they have added a category for 2026, and it's not what you might think it should be. Yeah, it's
stunts.
Not stunts. Nope. It's achievement in casting. Yeah, so casting directors, because of course everyone has their own union, they're going to be able to award an Academy Award. I'm not knocking them at all, but the achievement in casting, I would figure, would already be there with best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress. Instead, they get a whole totally different award, and stunts still gets nothing.
Where's best producer, best executive producer? It's like,
isn't the producer usually the guy who gets the award for best film?
Yes, best picture. Yeah,
yeah,
that goes to the producers.
Yep. So that is the best producer. Mm-hmm. So to your point, like technically speaking, when Chris Pine goes to walk up to get his Oscar, like I guess the casting director should be up there with them. That would make a lot more sense.
Chris Pine goes up there. Hedging your bets early,
for
huh?
What? Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's not even on the list, but I just threw out a name that was stuck in my head for some reason.
He really wants Dungeons & Dragons 2.
Oh. You know what? He does deserve it for Dungeons & Dragons 1.
No, he doesn't. Come on. Like, come on. Let's at least be realistic.
Oh, I was being facetious.
Were you? I don't know.
I was.
Anyway, why can't they do stunts? Obviously, you can make a new category and make us sit 5 to 10 minutes longer to do this. I got to tell you, and it's the one, and I know people that work in the film industry, they're very happy about this. Good for you. People that actually watch your damn awards don't give a shit. This is idiotic. You've got cast already covered. You've got best actor, best actress, and all that. I already said it. Stunts. People literally risk their fucking lives for our entertainment, and there is no category for stunt team, stunt coordinator, whatever. But you got CGI in there, the people clicking on the keyboard. You got the casting director. You got director. You got editors. You got the musicians that create the score. You got everything except the people that literally get injured and die. I just don't get it. This is such an epic fail on the Academy's part. This pisses me off, in case you haven't noticed.
We're just going to let Aaron have his soapbox on this one because we all agree with him. And Aaron's super passionate about it. We just can't speak to the same level as Aaron does. But we agree 100% what Aaron said.
I can barely speak to the level in which Troy can speak to it, too. So I'm like, yes.
Barely might be an understatement.
And Aaron and I are friends with like people that actually do stunts and stuff like that. And it's like it's degrading is what it is. It really puts down those people's craft. Especially because the Emmys have a category for it and the Oscars don't. Like, that's just horseshit.
Yeah, TV has a category for it. Movies don't. Movies have a budget of like up to $200 million. I mean, look at the Fast and Furious movies and all those crazy stunts, like $200, $300 million. The TV's got a budget of $8 sometimes, and they're getting nominated before movies are. I don't get it. There's like a team of 10 and they're getting nominated, but a team of 400 being led by a coordinator, like, that doesn't get noticed. Apparently that's not important to this Academy. And I get tired. I'm sorry. I'm going to go on a tangent again. I get tired of, you know, all the art and cinema and everything that they have to throw the fanciful words around to just denigrate anything that they don't enjoy. And these are films that I realize are not speaking on the Academy's level because they're not about someone whose life is destroyed and they're very sad and they're crying in the gutter before they do heroin and engage in some kind of horrific act. I get that's more of what wins Oscars, but those people risk their lives. Acknowledge them. Acknowledge them. Stop treating them like they don't matter, because they matter and they're doing very dangerous things. And they keep saying that they're looking at it and they're looking at it, but instead of making it happen, they can find a way to make this shit happen. God. Sorry, John, you were trying to say something earlier.
I don't have any words anymore.
He was moved. He was moved by your speech.
I'm just touched in a way that I can't describe by the words you said. I'm going to go to Hollywood and picket the Oscars.
Wouldn't that be amazing if we saw him on the news next week? Like, who is this random dude? There's like one guy on the street corner. He just got a sign, make a stunts category.
Why is he all by himself? The stunt people don't even know what the hell's going on.
Why is he bringing a laptop? Oh, he works from home. I get it.
Right, yeah.
All right, well, it's not quite official yet, but it does look more and more likely that the WB is going to wipe another movie off its books with Looney Tunes' Coyote versus Acme, unless public pressure forces them to do otherwise. But they have already done this in the past, right? They did it with Batgirl not too long ago. So the question overall is this right for the public, artists, or even taxpayers? Because we're basically paying for it in a way.
I mean, to answer your question up front, as far as the last part, no, this is not exactly something that I think is fair for taxpayers at all. I mean, why do they get to sit there and write off something that they completely put all this effort into and decided that they're not going to release it for publication? It's not like we can do that in our lives and say, oh, you know, I put all this money into reading a book and I decided that I didn't want to write a book report on it. So I get that money, time and money back, right? We can't do it. And I don't understand why these companies get to do that sort of thing. But on the other end of things, I as far as making a financial decision to not release something like this, it makes sense.
So you're kind of on their side in a way.
I'm on their side to the degree of which as long as people have been paid, which people have been paid to make this movie. Yeah. Okay. So what? The people showed up, they got their paycheck, they did something. Whether or not it gets released, that's no longer in the hands of the creatives. If you want to be able to do something that's going to get released, that there's a whole market. I think they call it the indie market, where you can do that sort of thing and you can deal with those trials and tribulations when it comes to releasing something to the public. I am sort of on their side when it comes to being financially sound. If they don't see the financial benefits of releasing it, then I don't see why they have to. As a creative, I am against their side because the love, energy, and everything else that people could put into this has been already put into it, and they have done nothing but start looking forward to the day in which people can see something that they put together, and yet now it's not going to happen. So again, I'm on their side. I'm not on their side, and I think it's unfair because of the taxpayers.
I'm glad that this whole episode is about love because this felt like a relationship because I have no idea what you mean or want.
There's no one answer to this, unfortunately.
Fair. Sorry, we lost Troy.
Yeah, Troy's dead.
Yeah, man. Here's what I don't understand. I don't have a finance degree. I don't have an accounting CPA. I don't even have the qualities to play one on television for this particular topic. I don't understand why they're asking for $80 million to sell the movie when they get a $30 million tax write-off. Why don't we just sell it for $30 million then? Like, dollar's a dollar's a dollar. So I got to understand what the funny math is in all of this, because if you're only going to get a $30 million tax write-off and you're trying to like save money, then why are you being so greedy asking for 80? Sell it for 40 million.
I think it was 40 and 7, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong on that. Maybe you're right. Whatever the numbers are.
It doesn't matter what the numbers are. The numbers aren't the same. That's what I don't understand.
Right.
Like we're going to write it off for a loss versus what we were selling it for. Then why don't we just sell it for what we're writing it off for? Like that's the part I don't understand how this.
Yeah, but Troy, if they sell it for what they can write it off to a loss, then it's still a loss.
Well, they could make 75. They were asking for 75 to 80 million. That's the number. And they were stood to make 35 to 40 million on the tax write down. My opinion. Well, we have our opinions because there is no concrete fact as to the why, but I will say that I think my opinion is because they don't want to sell it, because they don't want the public telling them what to do. So they price it as high as they can. They're only going to take, They are very hard and firm with you. Either you match this or we're not doing it. So they basically said, we're either going to make money or we're writing it off. Because I think they're just kind of being disingenuous in a way. They're saying that they're willing to sell it, but they really aren't. They don't want to sell Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes is a brand property. That's not even just right. a property. That's a brand property for them.
Right. Yeah, it's a big, well, Looney Tunes is a big part of WB, so you can't really do that. They have something to the tune of $85 billion they're trying to work off. So that's where the stupidity comes in, because of this whole merger and because of what the stream, you know, here I'm about to say something that Aaron's going to make Aaron happy. They lost so much money on the streaming side of things when the pandemic happened that they have this $85 billion thing they have to catch up on to be able to make their money on. So they can either do the guaranteed $35 to $40 million, or they can gamble on something higher.
80 million, you mean, for the movie? Because they're not valued at 80 billion.
No, maybe, not the yeah. movie, the debt that they're dealing with.
Mm-mm, it's 45 billion.
Debate some headway.
The other article I was reading was something else. Okay. Well, there you go.
Either way, there's a shit ton of money they owe people.
They owe a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know how they're going to make it when
and
they're
saving,
not.
And saving $30 million isn't going to make a dent in the amount of money they owe. So why don't you just put it on your streaming service and entice people to sign up for subscribers, and then you would get people to actually give you money.
It's true.
Oh wait, that's because they don't respect their own properties, because they took Westworld off of their service. Oh, my which God. Was
okay, well, that's, of course you went there.
I mean, it can't be just Westworld, but yeah, I mean, I get your feeling, but
I will say this, down. Like, here's the thing. I just don't understand why this is a thing. Okay. Because you spent the money on it. Why should taxpayers have to pay? And granted, if it exists in the books, it's Congress's fault that it's there. They should have gotten rid of it, and they should still get rid of it, because the idea that you can spend whatever they spend in this total movie and then write off and get $40 million back instead of, you know, just having to suck it up. Hey, you spent it. Sorry. It's all that we can do. That's it. If it wasn't. Yeah, it's just frustrating.
That part is frustrating.
It's just frustrating. Yep. Because I just feel like because if they write it off, that basically means that on their taxes, where they could be paying $35 or $40 million, they're not paying that. Right. And that means that for programs and whatnot, where are the other $35 million going to come from? It'll come from the individual taxpayer. So essentially, we are paying for their mistakes. That's not fair. It's not fair. I don't like it.
We're not actually paying for that. It's just that the $35 million isn't going in the kitty to bring down the national debt.
Right. So therefore, they could be paying for it. So eventually we will have to pay for it. That money has to be paid at some point. It's going to come from taxpayers.
It's right? Like, you know, a better analogy than the one I made would have been, say, something like, it's not like we can decide that we're going to soup up this 1985 Camaro that and make it look really sweet and put a nice paint job on it. But because we didn't put as good of a paint job on it as we really wanted to, and we can't resell it for the value we want to resell it for, then we can just write it off, because we can keep the Camaro and write off the value that we would have been able to sell it for. That's probably closer to the.
They can't keep the Camaro. They got to light the Camaro on fire.
Right.
You got to burn it down, which I also is why they haven't done a public screening of it, because if they do a public screening of it, they cannot write it off. It has to be, they can do private screens, but they can't do public screens, because South by Southwest was actually going, they invited them to screen that movie at the festival, and then they said absolutely not. And I think that's why they never intended to really sell it. I don't think so. I think the WB is playing with us. Anyway, let's go into positive news, because the Super Bowl did have some great things, including the most watched trailer since Spider-Man No Way Home. Deadpool 3 was one of them, the best one of them. Of course, you know, what you saw in the Super Bowl was like 10 seconds or whatever, but you went online and Ryan Reynolds, thank God, was there for us, and he let us see the glory that is Deadpool in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. What say you? I'm finally excited about the Marvel Cinematic Universe again. This is the first time in a long time. Guys, you with me?
Deadpool 3, I watched the trailer and I was just like, that's funny. That's funny. That's funny. That's funny. Everything about that trailer was funny. And yes, I am super excited. Not that it's MCU. Not that he's actually all here. Not that Wolverine is in the yellow suit. I think it's just going to be an amazing movie all around. And I'm really interested to see like how crass and dirty we're going to go for Disney.
How about that Wolverine introduction? Rather than showing us Hugh Jackman, they do the joke where you see the shadow of his claws, like we've seen heroes do so many times before, mm-hmm, Darth Vader, mm-hmm, and Indiana Jones and all that, where you just see a shadow. And they did the claws. He's like, hey, help me up, ape. And then he just does the claws. Nope, I'm good. What a great joke and a great introduction for this. Is Wolverine perfect. Will be here, but you don't get to see him yet.
Oh, right. The closest we got to seeing him was also his back, the back shot of him playing cards.
Sure, yeah.
From that comic, which was really cool. So when that trailer first came on the TV, when I was watching the game, as I say, the TV, I was sitting there and I was like, all right, everybody shut up. Everybody just shut up. It's just shut up right now. Just shut up.
And then the commercial was over.
And then the commercial was over. And my friend that I was watching the game with, she was like, nobody was saying anything. And I go, I had to find this now. So yeah, I went and I had to find it. It took me a little bit because it wasn't right on YouTube, I guess. I don't know what the deal with that was. But I am excited for the first time for something Marvel. Yes. I'm annoyed that we're dealing with the TVA because I think anything that has to do with the Loki show, just because of the whole multiverse thing, makes me a little bit crazy.
Me too.
I understand that they have to have the multiverse in there, and it makes sense to throw him into the multiverse because he'll really be able to break that fourth wall hardcore.
Literally break it. He crashes into the Fox logo. That's right. Breaking it about as literally as you can.
Right, absolutely. So there are so many things that I think were great. I'm hoping it's going to be really good. If not, at least he's showing up and saying that he's going to be the MCU Jesus.
I love that. Marvel Jesus. My favorite thing about the whole trailer is I learned what pegging is. I did not know what that meant, and I had to Google it, and now I'm scarred. But good information.
Camming will never be the same again.
Troy, I learned a new thing. Come check this out. Now I know why you love lightsabers.
Kayak away as fast as possible.
Lights are on. Lights are off. Lights are on. Lights are off.
That's not a fire stick. We also got Wicked.
No.
Troy, I'm throwing this to you. You're a big musical guy. No.
Leave it on Broadway. There's some things that work on Broadway, and there's some things that work in movies. And this is one where you're just, it's been out for so long. We can finally do something with it. And no.
I'll tell you what.
It looked overly stylized for no reason. It was just so much stylized. Like the way that the production works on stage, because it is such a simple set. It's grandiose in its scope and size at the Gershwin in New York. But at the same time, it's a simplistic set, and you just go with your imagination to where it is. This literally looked like Willy Wonka on steroids. It was just like, oh my God, like there's just so much color. And no, it just, and it's going to be two parts from what I understand.
It is. They're breaking it into two parts, which I think is a huge mistake. Number one, a huge mistake. Number two, I see what you're saying but I didn't want to say it until you had your piece because you're the musical guy. If you loved it, I'd probably just be a little quieter. But since you brought it up, I will say the word that kept popping into my mind is forced. This whole movie feels forced. I'm watching it. Everything felt like it was just forced. Like none of this felt natural that I saw. I'm hoping an eventual trailer, maybe once they get better effects implemented and that sort of thing, will bring me around. I haven't really heard the music yet. Maybe that'll capture my attention. But man, I just forced is all I kept thinking. Like nothing about it really spoke to me. And my mom is a huge Wizard of Oz fan. She loves Wizard of Oz. And she's not stoked based on the trailer. And she was looking forward to it.
Has she seen Wicked? Have you seen Wicked?
No, neither one of us have actually seen it. I've heard it's a wonderful musical.
Oh yeah. I would definitely go see it if you get a chance on stage.
Will do.
I don't have a dog in this fight. I thought it looked pretty. That's all I cared about. I was like, oh, wow, this looks pretty. And that's it. Full stop. The person that I was watching the game with who loves the musical and she loved the book, she was giddy and excited and totally in for this movie. So I can only speak to the excitement because she was sitting there going, everybody shut up. Everybody should shut up and let this happen. And I'm like, all right.
Seems like at your party, a lot of people were yelling at each other for no reason. Really?
Well, apparently nobody was talking either at that point.
Right. Nobody was talking. Except there was only the two of us.
It's like nobody's talking. We're all yelling. I don't know. All right. How about Twisters? Twisters came out. Everybody said, oh, no, it's not a remake. I'm like, well, it's got the little freaking silvery things. Looks like a damn remake. What say you? It had everything but the extreme in there.
Well, this is what every time I kept watching the trailer, I kept thinking, like, is this like a prequel? Like, is it an early version? Because the Dorothy thing was in the back and they operated the exact same way. And then I'm just thinking, like, is this why it's not a continuation? Because it's actually the early story?
Hmm.
Interesting thought. I did not consider that.
Maybe, because we don't really know much about the plot yet.
Right. I, you know, for me, I didn't have that much interest.
Hang on. I want to count the eyes in there. I think there were 47 eyes in that 3 seconds.
Okay. That's awesome.
Just keep it going.
Can I go now?
It's my Taylor Swift shot game. No, I'm just going to keep pointing it out. Keep going.
All right.
Shots every time.
All right. Well, you were going to get freaking drunk. So I lost my point. Thanks.
Good. If that's all it took to lose it, that's what a conversation is, John. I mean, last week you said you guys wanted to have a conversation. I want to make sure you had one. Lost Troy again.
The extreme small child.
Right. Okay. So
Did you break again?
I did.
He's good. Just pause, breathe, and go.
The extreme prequel, Darth Vader.
Mini Helen Hunt.
Legos.
That's okay. So it's hard to sit there and get excited about this because the original cast is nowhere to be seen on this. However, you've got what looks like the beginning of a cast that will at least have a similar, if not very close to the same sort of chemistry that the original cast did. So it's possible we'll see something just as good. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to deal with this one because, again, I would rather see the original cast, but I'm okay with seeing something fresh and new. And if it's a prequel, that's kind of cool.
Okay. If we had the original cast, two of them would be corpses flying around the tornado. Sorry.
Maybe that's how they get. Maybe it goes through the graveyard in town, and that they fly up. I'm sorry, that's really bad.
Instead of cow, you're like Philip Seymour Hoffman, Bill Paxton. Sorry,
I was just minding all my own business, and all of a sudden, Philip Seymour Hoffman just ragdoll his way across the screen.
I'm horrible. All right, well, Twisters looks good. I like Glenn Powell, so I'll definitely watch anything Glenn Powell does, and. I mean, dude, and Anthony Ramos is really great, too. It's tornadoes. Like, I even watch when they make really cheap, low budget. I watch Sharknado movies. I like tornadoes, as long as they're not in my backyard or destroying property that I'm aware of.
And as long as the special effects work. That's the key.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the first movie looked fantastic, so I'm sure this one's going to look good, too.
Because no offense, there's the shot of her, like, holding on to some kind of rail underneath a bridge, and all the stuff is blowing past her, and I'm like, and why isn't your head down? Like, why are you looking straight into the things that are blowing in your face?
Because she's looking beautiful. That's why.
Yeah.
Look at me. I hope they drive by Helen Hunt. Maybe she's flying by, you know? As a cameo that way. Okay. Inside Out 2, Troy. Did you see this one?
Yeah. Nothing new there in that commercial.
It's kind of disappointed, right?
Well, they need to spend the money they need to spend on something like that. You know, Moana 2, yeah, some nobody knew about. So therefore, yeah, that's worth spending some money on.
That was a surprise. That was supposed to be, I think, a TV series, and they converted it into a movie. I'm pretty excited for that.
My big one, though, was Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I am more excited for that movie now because of what I saw in the trailer for that one.
Okay, explain that one. Because I watched it, and I get it. You see people now, and you kind of see the people storyline, the human storyline. Why are you more excited now than you were before? Because you were stoked before.
Yeah, because it talks about the evolution of the apes through the three movies and how they come to be where they are. So now that they are basically the primary species of the planet and they're hunting the humans, there was lineage that is basically in history and things that have not been handed down appropriately. So it's almost like an oligarchy in a way where they're controlling information. So now that there's these apes that have basically found that humans and apes used to live together in harmony and that they are able to coexist. There's a whole coalition of them that are trying to say, hey, we've been lied to from our own leadership. So let's overthrow the leadership so that we can actually make a peaceful society. So it's almost like an internal civil war, if you will, that I think we're going to see in this movie.
Hmm.
I don't care.
Wow. Well, thanks for throwing that in.
No problem. I just wanted to make sure everyone understood that I'm not excited at all for that movie.
Thanks for bringing the podcast up, man. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I am excited for it. I do like that there's a humanity aspect to it, because when I thought it was just going to be all apes, and I'm just like, well, just make a Pixar movie at this point, you know. But this there's still a humanity element to it, and I think you do need some kind of grounding for them to go back and forth. But I guess you could have just the apes going and dealing with, you know, dictators. I mean, I think that could work too as its own storyline. Which it seems like,
especially because it's supposed to be Caesar's son.
Right. So I'm excited. All right. Well, before we move on our first assignment aboard Air Force One, a rookie Secret Service agent faces the ultimate test when terrorists hijack the plane and target the president, leading her into a relentless battle that could change the course of history. Air Force One Down is the latest heart-pounding action thriller to buy on Vudu right now. It's rated R from Republic Pictures. Air Force One Down is available right now on Vudu. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. What's love got to do? Got to do with it? That's what we're going to talk about, because this episode released officially on Valentine's Day, and nothing says love like hoes. Let's talk about it. Why are you guys laughing? Holy
Jesus.
Sorry. Is that offensive? I don't know.
I don't think it's offensive at all. I think hoes do know their love.
Sex work is real work.
Okay, now that's weird.
Well, I mean, it is. It's a job. Don't be mad because they wouldn't take your application.
Hey, you know.
Anyways.
All right, let's talk about love in movies and TV shows. So, like, relationships you have connected with, not just on a romantic level. So what I'm saying there is, I don't want to talk about just romantic love. I think that gets hammered into the ground. To me, love is important, whether it be familia, whether it be friendship, whether it be romantic. And I just kind of want to know, like, we watch so many movies, so many TV shows. Which ones really resonate with you and why? I will start Sean and Gus. That's an easy one.
That is an easy one.
Yeah, complete my sentence. What I will say.
Sorry, I thought we were having a conversation and you put a pause in there.
No. Sean and Gus, I'm going to talk about in a little bit more, but I think the more important aspect of that particular show is Sean and Henry. Sean and Henry have a very complicated relationship, one that I can understand. It's kind of in many ways similar to mine with my own father. And I really enjoy the fact that they love each other despite their extreme differences and even kind of dislike for one another oftentimes. And I think that kind of speaks to a lot of families that just don't want to acknowledge that very often, that we love each other, even though I don't like most of what you do there. How's that?
That's good. I like the familial aspects a lot. I mean, I grew up with the Keatons and Growing Pains. I forget what the Growing Pains family name was.
Seavers, wasn't it?
Seavers. Yes, Seavers. Thank you. You know, and even the Cosby Show and and all that. It's like,
as long as you didn't drink from his glass. Yeah.
Right. The things that those relationships had from a family perspective is that they all kind of came together. And it wasn't even so much just the families, it was also the other people that were coming in and out of the house, right? Boner comes to mind from Growing Pains.
Boner, I remember.
And Silver Spoons, right? You growing up with Silver Spoons, and you had Afonso's character coming in, being friends with Richie. And I think there's just a lot of that friendship bonding that happens when you know that you're the community house, right? You come home from school and you hang out at this place, and you go in the basement, and kind of like that 70s show, you know, same kind of concept. It's like, it's the safe place to go in the neighborhood. And I think that just shows that those parents that are there not only care about their kids, but they also care about their friends' kids as well.
See, that's the aspect I don't think it's talked about enough, especially like the friends aspect. Friends, the show, they all have this bonding love. Saved by the Bell. I mean, they all have this like bonding love. I just, I think there's something special about shows that really focus on friendship instead of just making everything romantic. Everybody doesn't have to date each other and whatnot, although in both of those shows they end up, everybody ends up dating each other. But I also think that's the hindrance and the problem with those shows. As you get too many, you start to think those are the only characters in the world and they should be dating other people. You know, I like when they focus on the friendships. There's so many shows that I think are so much better when they keep the friendships platonic. X-Files is one, you know, when they had that friendship love, it didn't evolve into romantic love. I thought it was so much better because there are real relationships like that in the world and not enough of them really get play. So I'm a big fan of the friendship love, more so than romantic, because romantic love to me is usually a little too fake in movies. It's too dreamlike. It's too romanticized. And it kind of doesn't seem real to me. So I really appreciate good friendship love.
Yeah, those are some really good options. I think where I get into the friendship love is like the Golden Girls. There's a familial aspect of that of those relationships where they're all kind of sisters with one mother who's a little bit wacky, but still it's a great example of older friends, which now they're all our age. That sucks. Even though they seem like they were ancient back then. Now I'm having an existential crisis. Anyhow, Golden Girls, Stranger Things is another great one where you have a group of friends who survive through all these different adventures. And yet the kids themselves have developed into their own little family bond where their parents are actually almost nearly not involved, with the exception of Winona Ryder's character, who's the only parent who's involved with what's going on with those kids, and it makes sense. And that's what I kind of felt like my childhood was growing up, because my mom was always the mom for the neighborhood. Everyone showed up and called her mom, and we all got into our wacky adventures, and yet my mom was the one that was sat there and got us out of trouble or helped us. Other good friend relationships that I like is like Community has a nice feel to it, because it's all kind of dysfunctional, where a lot of our friendships are all really dysfunctional. I was thinking about a friend conversation today where he and I were having a good talk, and you know, our signing off is a little bit weird. I don't know why we have to do it that way, but it tends to be kind of weird.
You can't just say bye.
Work spouse is also another relationship I think that works really well. When you think about the one that I think really grew over time, over the 4 to 5 seasons that it existed, was Walter and Astrid on Fringe.
How did I not know Fringe was going? I'm surprised Lost hasn't come up yet. It's early.
Well, that we already covered them with the whole social dynamic thing of being a family, but the growth of the two of them and their relationship and how they played off of each other and became bonded in the work that they were doing, that they almost come to care for each other in a loving way without having to actually be shipped together. I think that's really a great way to do it. Another one that I kind of think of, you know, is Meredith and Christina in Grey's Anatomy, their relationship, you know, through work. And then it transcends into supporting each other through relationships where they have their own like dance moves and their own behavior. They kind of read off of each other. Midge and Susie, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, most recently, I think is another great example of that work relationship paying off, becoming best friends and truly caring for each other, even when times got really hard, especially between Midge and Susie towards the end of that series. There was a little bit of a falling out and they still became friends all the way to the end, even in their old age.
Let me ask you guys in true conversation form, in respect to like friendships and love and friendships, you know, when we look at TV, you know, people are always saying, well, serial killers get violence for movies, but you know, that's nonsense. But when it comes to friendships, we get so ingrained and really resonating deeply with a lot of these relationships we see on TV and in movies, a lot more probably on TV, just because there's so many episodes and there's so much more engagement in our brains and our hearts. Do you feel like the shows that you love, whatever the shows are that you love, do you feel like they help you understand what a quality friendship is, or do they hinder you from having a quality friendship? Does that make sense?
Yes. And I would say that they would help. The only ones that really help me the most are the ones that...
Well, I'm saying I'm not being very specific.
I'm not going to be very specific. I'm broadly, it's the ones that where I look at them, I'm like, ooh, that's not healthy. None of that is healthy. Those are the ones that I look at and I go, okay, that I don't want to look like that. And I don't know which ones are the ones that I do want to look like, but they're the ones that I know, like, oh, that's that. I don't want whatever it is that's going on there. That's dumb.
Yeah. At the same time, I think you have shows like Million Little Things.
No, hang on. You didn't answer my question. I asked like a real conversation question.
Yeah.
Do they affect you? Don't be specific. Just broadly. Does it?
Well, 100%, I guess it affects. Otherwise, we wouldn't be watching this stuff in the first place. If it didn't affect us, we turn it off because it'd be like, this is stupid. Why am I wasting my time?
But do you think it helps you or hinders you in relationships?
In real life, it helps tremendously.
How so? How does it help you? You specifically.
Well, for me, like I'm watching a specific show or television and I'm watching these scenarios play out and I kind of go like, oh, would I do what Gary does in A Million Little Things? Would I be able to jump into his shoes and do that for somebody? You know, some things maybe yes, some things maybe no. Like, and who specifically would I do that for? So it makes me start analyzing different motives and different aspects of how would I actually handle some of these situations in my personal life with close friends, to the point where there's a show that I got a whole group of close friends together and we started watching the show for the final season together in my upstairs office where I do the podcast from. Like, there's just a bonding moment between friends where you can see yourselves in these characters. I mean, that's what connects you to them and why you keep watching the show in the first place.
You know what I find is that a lot of times it will, especially if I watch a lot of TV shows, it will kind of teach me in my own mind how I want to be, how I want to be seen, I guess. And also oftentimes if I really, really connect with characters on screen, there's a way to garner an understanding of topics I'm not very familiar with, you know, and I think gay romantic love and stuff like that, you know, when you watch something like Schitt's Creek, I think that really puts you in a position to, okay, oh, it's just like us, you know? And I know that sounds silly because everybody should automatically think that, but if somebody is completely in a different scenario than yours, you might not see it the same way. And I think that gives you kind of a window into the life of someone else that's living in an experience you don't currently have in your life. So it gives you a viewpoint of understanding and can help push your understanding level along. It doesn't matter where your politics are or what side you are, you know, you support it, da da da. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about really understanding how people spend their lives and their loves and whatnot. And I think that's important. I think that really does a lot for people in terms of growing as people.
I concur.
I hope I said that right. Probably did.
Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you, why do so many shows struggle with allowing friendships between men and women? Like, why do we always have to ship them off in the end? Why?
It's the norm. It's what's expected. It's the culture.
But isn't it frustrating?
It is, because there's other ways to think about, you know, love and friendship and partnership and things of that nature that we're not tied into gender. We're not tied into monogamy. We're not tied into all these like cultural norms. But when I'm a TV show, I have to appeal to the masses. I think we were talking about this with, you know, Super Bowl commercials. Like, there's just a certain way we have to do these commercials in order to get them to pop for the 30 seconds at $7 million that I have to do to reach the most number of people possible. And I think that's why it's easy for people to immediately go like, ooh, those two should be together. Like, they're a boy and a girl. There could be sparks between the two of them. Like, let's go ahead and get those two together at some point in time. I mean, Bones was a great example of, they put it off as long as they could. Mm-hmm. And then the show wasn't the same. Moonlighting, again, same thing, wasn't the same.
Castle.
Castle. Yeah, Castle. There's not everything has to be boy-girl.
No, sometimes it should be boy-boy, because if you were watching Hawaii 5-0, Steve and Dano should have been humping like crazy.
And it shouldn't be assumed. I mean, yes, Billy Crystal said that boys and girls can't be just friends, but at the same time, boys and girls can be just friends. It's okay to be just friends.
It depends on who's in control of that friendship, but yes, you know,
I don't agree with you, man. I mean, it's really about your mindset.
Yeah. Girls are just as horny as guys are, John. Okay. There are some girls that'll push, and there are some guys that'll push, but at the end of the day, you can be just friends. It's okay.
I've never seen it. So,
okay. You should probably look at that. Let's have a therapy session right now.
You want to talk about that? Yeah, let's talk about it.
No, let's not. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Let's You know, I know that I have a lot of friends who are girls, but I don't, you know, never mind.
sounds like you have a problem. That's what
I'm No, I don't have a problem.
Troy, did you hear that? Because that's what I heard.
I just said that I have a lot of friends that are girls, but I know a lot of girls that have guys that were friends that were breaking case of emergency.
I've never seen it. Is that, I believe, the quote? Is that the quote you heard, Troy? I've never seen it. What you heard?
I don't know what John even thinks anymore.
Right. It's hard. I don't even know why you guys are trying to, it's like Charlie Day trying to do the string line right now.
Oh no, I've already got the connection. It's one string and it's you. I got it.
Okay. So what I was going to say is that I think the reason why we get to these points where we want to see ships happen is because we start seeing the chemistry between two different people and we automatically assume that chemistry has to be like a romantic chemistry. But if you take Lost, for example, Jack and what's her face? Evangeline Lilly's character that I can't. Okay. Jack Kate. And Kate.
Yep.
They were two very strong people, two very powerful characters. They had no business being together but even though you saw this chemistry between them as two strong people, everyone kept on shipping them. But they had no business being together.
I never saw their chemistry. I mean, to me, it was always her and Sawyer, always.
Right, because again, she's a strong person. He's a strong person, but they're both not very trustworthy. So. It works out.
Kate was always alone. That's why she was always shipped with her kid. Because, like,
I thought that was a really that was a real disadvantage to that whole character. I mean, you want to go? They just wanted to keep shipping her because she's a pretty woman on an island, and it's like, give her own arc. You know, stop trying to pair her up with one of these guys.
I think that's something that's happening less and less.
That's what she got in the end.
What's that?
I said that's what Kate got in the end. She wasn't shipped to one specific person.
I guess, but I mean, it really kind of hindered the whole.
No, it really did. That was.
The audience was doing that stuff.
No, the writers did it because it happened on screen. So the writers had some culpability there.
Even in let's take a show like Psych, even when Sean and
Juliet,
that's her name. Even when Sean and Juliet finally got together, it was okay, but it started to be less okay when they started to create a rift between those two characters, because Sean is always going to be Sean, and yet they have to break up for a time being. And
yeah. You mean when Sean and Juliet got together, and then they basically forced that whole breakup
split.
Yeah and it ended up taking away from the show, because the show is Sean and Gus. It's not about that,
the two of them, and I think that made that season really hard to sit through. It was probably one of the more challenging seasons of the show.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah,
that's fun for sure. So tell me something, Troy, because you love these family shows, and you kind of talked about it a little bit, but I know you religiously watched This Is Us. You did the same thing with Million Little Things. Like, you really get engaged with those kinds of heavy, dramatic, family focused shows. And I guess I mean, you kind of talked about the comedies and whatnot, but why does that appeal to you so much? Because that's heady, that's heavy. I mean, you know, I always tell you I don't watch that stuff because I just don't want to be depressed every week. You know, I feel like I've had enough family drama for one lifetime. I don't really need to watch it on TV, but you really get into it. So why does it feel good to cry every week?
I mean, I don't say I cry every week. I think there are points and times where you're resonating with a particular character and you're going, oh yeah, that definitely sings with me, or that makes a spot with me, or I could see myself in that character. I thoroughly enjoy really good what do you want to call it, ensemble shows, right? I enjoyed Friends. I enjoyed Seinfeld. I don't think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread in either one of those, but I also love Big Bang Theory, and I also loved How I Met Your Mother. I love Cobra Kai. I love where you get a lot of characters that interact with each other on a regular basis. But This Is Us, I liked more of the evolution of how the show was going back and forth in time with those characters. I think that was probably the most interesting thing, and seeing the growth and development of those characters. With A Million Little Things, I like that one specifically because you had this tragedy of one of the main characters, you know, killing themselves in the very first episode, and then another one stopping themselves from killing themselves and when you think about people that in your life that have either succumbed to suicide or had hard times or were killed at an earlier stage and you thought they were going to go, mm-hmm. and then seeing the people bond around that and then understand that that's actually kind of going on in my life at that exact same time. Like, you just, those people were my friends, you know, especially during the pandemic. Like, I miss seeing Gary and the crew, right? It's just, yeah, those guys, Million Little Things was a special show that if you didn't get to see it, I think it was actually better than This Is Us, to be quite honest, because I felt it was more real, where This Is Us was more manufactured for the cries. But in both situations, you're definitely seeing the connective tissues between humanity, and anything that could connect humanity together in a good way to make me think and ponder and wonder about my own humanity, I'm all in for that stuff.
Okay.
Or in the case of Fringe, actually save humanity altogether.
And it all comes back to Fringe. All right. Well, we're going to break it down to three different categories, kind of. We're going to name our favorite romantic relationships, familial relationships, and friendship-based relationships, all in the name of love. Like, what are the best in TV and film for you? So we're going to start with your favorite example of romantic love. So, Trey, what is your favorite example of romantic love? And you can pick a movie or a TV or both.
I picked Lily and Marshall from How I Met Your Mother. I felt that this relationship showcased what a real relationship would be for as long as they had been together. For my wife and I, we've been married over 20 years, but we've known each other even before we were married for a couple of years. So it's like almost a quarter century now that I've known my wife. Mm-hmm. And so seeing Lily and Marshall go through what they've gone through with the whole experience of, well, maybe they were each other's firsts, you know, sexually. And then you find out that Marshall's like, well, maybe Lily, you know, had somebody before him and how he had to deal with that. And then the fact that they were always together made it feel like a codependent relationship. So then when they weren't together for one night, it made everybody go crazy. So there's just a lot of good about the relationship and a lot of not so good about the relationship, but that makes the relationship feel like exactly what people go through in a romantic relationship when they're together. Because there are parts of your time where it's like, they're your only person in the world and you want to be with them. And there's other times where you're like, no, I really want to go to this art thing on the other side of the world and leave you for a while. I think that just really showcased, you know, true romantic, how they stuck together through the entire show. And then we're still together at the end.
Very good. And did you have a movie one or no?
Not yet, but I'll come back.
Okay. I will tell you my film one is going to, it's going to seem out of left field, but I promise I'll explain it if you guys are willing to hear it. My first one is Mitch and Barbara Robbins, Billy Crystal and Patricia Wettig from City Slickers. You guys remember that movie, City Slickers?
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Okay. I absolutely love their relationship. And a big reason why I say that this is my favorite example of movie love, I mean, you think of Harry Met Sally, and I just think that's a really almost toxic relationship in many respects, even though I love that movie. But, you know, he's having a very much a midlife crisis, and she's nothing but supportive and saying, you know what, go out, do this idiotic thing you have to do with your friend. She's always okay with him going out with his friends and living his life. And also when he's having this breakdown, he's having a hard time finding himself. She knows what he needs. She's being supportive. She's understanding. She's, you know, they have a real marriage and a real relationship. And I just find that so refreshing because so often in movies it's manufactured, it's clunky, it's junky. I just don't really respect it. And this is probably the best example I can think of what a real relationship is like. Now, Troy, it's one of your favorite movies. You tell me, am I right or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think I feel like they're actually at a point, too, when they finally do this dude ranch concept. It's like she understands that if he doesn't go and do this right now, that their relationship isn't even going to last because he's just broken as a person. And so for him to go out and find his one thing, and then he understands what his one thing is, and that's, you know, coming back to his family at the end of the day, at the end of the movie, I think that's, it's like the perfect example of romantic love and trying to find yourself, and you find yourself in the people that have always been there.
And also I think it's important. I feel like too often in movies, it's all about, oh, you're the one, or it's extremely passionate, or it's, you know, whatever. I feel like real romantic love is more about understanding that I don't have to sit there and dream of you all day long. I just have to understand you and know what you need. And I think that's something that's really overlooked in most movies for sure. And I just really love how they did it in City Slickers. And it seems really weird because it's just like, you know, it's a, it seems like a guy comedy, but it's, you know, it's really about a guy trying to save his marriage. Like you said, for TV, Patrick and David, in Schitt's Creek, they really, really have surprised me in terms of that relationship. It just feels like the most genuine relationship I've ever seen on TV. There's none of the forced breakups. They figure it out. They support each other. They work through things. I really love how they handled that entire relationship and how it's the anti-sitcom relationship. You know, it's just so opposite of what almost every other sitcom does. And I just love how they handled it. Those are my two. Johnny?
Those are two good, solid choices. And I do love the Patrick and David choice because that's, I mean, that's exactly what it means. For my TV one, I'm going to go with Gomez and Morticia Adams.
That's good. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you think about it, Gomez and Morticia Adams were created at a time to be more or less a satire to what the American family was. They're supposed to be weird. They're supposed to be kooky. They're supposed to be all those things. And yet what they managed to do was at that time was create a husband who absolutely adores and respects his wife and create a wife who, loves her husband right back, supports her husband right back, and isn't and doesn't resent him in any way, shape, or form. It's interesting just seeing these two couples because, again, the idea for the Addams Family was to create something that's the complete opposite of the American family, and that's what they accidentally landed on. Or maybe it was on purpose, but they didn't realize what they were doing, where they're, you know, you have this healthy relationship and everyone's like, that's too weird. But I love it because for all those reasons, like, I love the fact that Gomez is just crazy about Morticia, and Morticia is all about supporting Gomez, and that's why they're my favorite TV couple. And then for movies, I'm going to have to go with Wesley and Buttercup from The Princess Bride. You know, you've got a character who, you call it whatever it was, whatever it is. At some point, he doesn't feel like he's good enough to be with the girl that he loves. So he runs off to become something bigger than himself and better than himself, and get himself to the point that he is now acceptable for the girl he loves. And then he ends up coming in, maybe the weirdest way possible, but saving her from being kidnapped. And then from there, you know, and she's not any wilting flower of a girl either, because she's hurting him along the way until she realizes who he is. So, yeah, that's why I like those two.
Good choices. I like those. Inconceivable, even.
Yeah. I know you hate The Princess Bride.
I do. Yep. Sure do. I don't hate it. I just don't really enjoy it, but same difference. Lots of people do. Troy? Did you have a movie yet, or do you want to move on?
Yeah, I do. And this one's probably an overlooked movie that many people might not have seen, and I highly recommend you do see it, so I don't want to spoil anything on this movie. But the movie Adrift with Shailene Woodley, like, that whole movie is basically love. They meet, a chance meeting, Tammy Oldham and Richard Sharpe. The movie's actually based off of a true story. And Shailene Woodley and Sam Claflin are the actor and actress that play these parts. And it's just a chance encounter that they bump into each other. So they get first love at first sight. They end up going and deciding they want to cruise the world together, and they fall in love together. And then they fall into this horrific storm. And then Richard ends up getting injured. And it's the love that she has for Richard that she basically tries to keep him alive until they can get rescued, even though they're in no shipping lane whatsoever. So it's a very interesting play on how far for love would you go, that you're actually going to take care of a person who's probably should have been thrown overboard a long time ago, yet she doesn't, and tries to keep him going at the cost of her own life. And how it plays out in the end is something you'll have to see for yourself.
I got to see that one. I've heard you mention that one before. I really need to see that one.
It's good.
Another really good example is when John Doe gives Detective Mills his wife's head in a box. Like, it's just a really romantic gesture that I think really goes unappreciated.
What is happening right now?
All right, moving on. What's your favorite example of familial love? Like family.
Family. I'm going to go ahead and say that the Goldbergs is one of my favorite examples of familial love. Mm-hmm. You know, you have this family that is, you know, takes place sometimes in somewhere in 1980 something. And you've got a kid who is dealing with parents who are weird and just don't understand anything because they're a couple of boomers. And you've got an older brother who whoops up on you and an older sister who is just hysterical. And yet somehow this whole family seems to work. It's one of my favorite examples of familial love because it just feels like your family. It, at least for me, it felt like my family, but a little bit different. That's why it's one of my favorites. I think Troy can also speak to this, right, Troy?
I sure can. Aaron could even speak to this because he knows now that Barry's friends are called the what?
I forgot. We met them. The kids that I don't know.
The JTP.
JTP.
JTP. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say.
The Jenkintown Posse.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yes. Aaron and I met the JTP walking on the Sony lot. It was pretty fun.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree. The Goldbergs, until Murray had some, the actor who played Murray had some challenges in the later seasons.
Right.
And ended up passing away on the show, not in real life. Yeah, I think there was an epitome of what life would have been like in the 80s with your parents. Being a kid that kind of grew up that way, Aaron's probably very similar. Aaron didn't watch the show, but Aaron could probably say like, yep, that was totally my family too. Because
no, Aaron would be upset because that kid had the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier, and I didn't have that.
That kid's rich. That kid's filthy rich.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I don't like that kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem to have a lot for the fact that she didn't work and his dad owned a furniture store.
Right.
And that was about the gist of it. So
the stuff you could buy in the 80s, man.
His computers and his cameras that he had, like, yeah, they were definitely rolling in the dough.
Yeah.
Yeah, not all of us had maids, John.
I might have had maids, but I did not get that aircraft carrier.
I don't care. You still had a maid. So did you have a movie or no?
We also didn't have U.S. troops storming our house either. So
right. I also did. Yeah.
Oh, shut up. You still had maids. It wasn't that
bad. Thank you. Thank you, Troy. Thank you very much for bringing that up.
Wasn't that bad.
What now?
Do you have a movie pick or no?
Yes.
Okay.
The music, the Sound of Music is my movie, A Familial Love.
Oh.
I think it's a great example of familial love. There is a minor romantic aspect of it, but yet you have a family who decides that their love and bond with each other is too strong for dealing with Nazi Germany, and they get the F out of there. Even with all the benefits that they would have had by leaning into that that whole idea, they decide to leave, and it's great. And the fact that they stuck together even during a time in which kids were prompted to not do that sort of thing, I thought was pretty great when the way they laid it out.
Love it. So my movie choice for best example of familial love is going to be The Goonies. My family was very unconventional, and so they always spoke to me in a way, because those kids were running around the neighborhood doing their own thing together as like brothers. And they had their own club, and they were just getting into all kinds of trouble, but they were always there for each other. They always stood by each other, even, you know, made total fun of each other and still knew that each other were loved and treasured. And I just feel like that was something that really spoke to me. Like that's a relationship. Those relationships are something that always spoke to me. Like you grow up thinking, I've always got to have friends like this, always. And I always have. I always have had friends like, they weren't always as fun or as, you know, willing to get arrested, but always have I maintained friendships where there are people I can count on and people I can trust. And I'm not going to be I'm not going to waste my time on people that wouldn't be there for me. I'm not going to be there for them if they're not going to be there for me, that kind of thing. And I just thought that was such an important movie in many respects. In terms of TV, Good Times. I adore Florida and James Evans. He was very stern and no nonsense. He reminded me a lot of my grandpa, but he loved his family, and she did everything she could to find the shining light in a world of struggles. Again, something I grew up very poor, so I know it's a different experience, but poor is poor. And she always reminded me of my own mom, you know, just the way she approached struggles, the way that she approached differences, the way that she just the way that she handled life, you know. Florida was always trying to get her family in the best spirit, have optimism, have a good sense of direction, and just, you know, flush out whatever was negative. So I find a solution instead of focusing on the problems. I just love that show. I love that family. And it was also a lot of fun. So
right on.
No, it was Dynamite.
Dynamite. For my movie, I'm going to go with The Parent Trap. Because I don't know how much more familial you can be than you're going to trade places with your twin sister so that you can see your mom or see your dad that you haven't seen since you were, you know, basically sperm at that point. So when you have that kind of ability to give up everything that you know because you want to go see the limelight in London or go experience what it's like to live on a ranch out in California, I think the two of them working together and then of course trying to work together in order to get their parents back together, I think is a perfect example of how much love they have for their mom and dad, even though they've just met at that one camp, that one fateful year.
It's a good one. Now, you, Lindsay Lohan or the older version?
Both movies are great.
Okay.
Both movies are awesome. Yeah. Original and the remake.
Okay.
TV, I will have to go with Jack and Rebecca and the Pearson family. Unfortunately, I know it's a little cliche, but there's just something about This Is Us that when you look at the entirety of the family and the history of the family as that show went along from pre-kids, Jack and Rebecca, and their individual selves, how they came to love each other, how they came to fight for each other, how they came to suffer through a miscarriage, to go to an adoption in the same day, to a father dying, to another father dying, to marriage, to divorce, to Alzheimer's, like it just the gambit of things that they run through throughout the course of this family's existence, right, over a 40 some year period and even into the future, you know, probably up to 50s towards the end of the production. It really shows how a family can stick together even when the things are the absolute worst you can possibly think of.
I mean, I know you said it's cliche, but on the same token, I get that show, like why that means so much to so many people, and I think that's, it's fair. I mean, so many people just love that family, and it's got a cool story. I mean, across
if, the board. If it wasn't for Jack and Rebecca, I don't think it show would have worked as well. But Jack and Rebecca were the heart and soul of that show, which is why the show should have ended with the penultimate episode and not the actual final episode.
Interesting.
I think that final episode kind of killed the perfectness of that second to last episode. It would have been just chef's kiss.
In your mindset, would you watch just the second to last episode and be done if you rewatched the show?
I would.
Really?
Yeah. I still watch all of Return of the King all the way to the end because I love Into the West by Annie Lennox over the credits.
Sure.
But yeah, this one I would actually stop at an episode early and say I'm good.
Okay. All right. What is your favorite example of friendly love, meaning nothing romantic? Troy, back to you.
I don't know if there was ever non-romantic stuff here because they actually did write a song together for a musical episode called Guy Love specifically. Mm-hmm. But that's JD and Turk from Scrubs. Wait. That relationship.
I gotta watch from day one. I really gotta watch that show.
It is so good. They go to med school together. They come out of med school together. They're working at the same hospital together. At the end of the eighth season, when Scrubs should have ended and never come back, they come back right for ninth season and become teachers with each other. JD and Turk's relationship over the course of that series, just memorable lines that you can quote every day of the week. It's just so much fun to watch them, especially the first season with their stuffed dog Rowdy in their apartment. And then they're complaining about Carla being over and they're complaining about Elliot being over. And, you know, they're just not enough time for each other. So they make time for each other. And again, they wrote the musical song Guy Love specifically about their relationship. I think it's just a testament to what friendship really is. And especially when you have to live and work together at the same time.
It's Sean and Gus before Sean and Gus.
I've seen several episodes. Okay, it's not like I've never seen it. And we are not on the same page there, but noted.
It's okay. A different kind of Sean and Gus. It's a Sean and Gus for a generation prior.
Right. But anyhow, that's a good choice. I really dig that choice because they like I love that. It's guy love. It's guy love. I love that bit.
All right.
Especially because he had your hand inside of me.
What?
It's the lyric of the song. You'll have to watch the show.
Yeah. Maybe I will. All right. What about movie?
Movie for me, nothing speaks to friendly love any more than Back to the Future and the relationship between Marty McFly and Doc Brown.
Oh, so like, not creepy at all?
No, not at all.
Teenagers hanging out with a, you know, 65-year-old or ambiguously aged old doctor.
Hey, you know what, if he's got a cool amp, he's got a great speaker set, you know, why not? Just come on over and plug in and blow the place to hell.
This feels like he's doing a little grooming, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, the relationship between the two of them, I think, is really interesting when you think about what Marty needs, because his family isn't exactly the coolest place to be. He really doesn't like hanging out with his family. He gets picked on by his brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. His parents don't think he's worth anything. So he goes and finds his own family in a completely chaotic, psychopathic, brain bleeding, you know, scientist who decided to invent time travel. And then when he sees his friend get mowed down in the parking lot, has to figure out how to save his life and do it all over again and over again and over again through the course of three movies. And the fact that they're able to actually see each other in the third act, finally, at the train with Clara. And then it just puts a nice testament bow on it that they were able to reunite in the end and not actually be separated in time forever.
Good point. Hey, all right. Still a little grooming going on, but hey, grooming them for friendships, right? All right, Johnny, what do you got?
Or's a lab rat, you know?
Yeah, that could be too.
I'm actually, right now, I'm kind of unpacking everything that I used to think about Back to the Future because it's been ruined for me.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Just like Neverending Story was ruined for me also. Aaron seems to do that with our childhood favorites.
Right, I'm just saying, right. At some point, maybe we should acknowledge this. The shit was weird. All right. The things that we were buying into was a little bit weird. All right. Why was no one questioning this relationship? It would be looked at today. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. My TV show pick that I'm going to go with is Parks and Recreation, in particular, the friendship between Leslie Knope and Ann Perkins. The friendship starts off as basically nothing, but Leslie decides to create this friendship because she wants to bond with this person. And the two of them really do honestly become great friends. You know, at every single time that they're together, Leslie calls her like a beautiful flower and things like that. And she's constantly supporting her. Even if they don't agree with what's going on in each other's lives, they are constantly in support of one another. And it's just a beautiful thing to see two women have a friendship like that.
Is that,
and then
is Annie, who plays her? Is that Plaza? Is that Aubrey?
No, it's
Rashida Jones.
Rashida Jones's character.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I tried the first season. I remember I didn't stick with it, so I didn't know that relationship, but okay. Thank you.
Right.
Were you the same as me? Because you watched The Office and therefore the first season reminded you of The Office and you're like, it's not The Office, so therefore I'm not going to continue.
Even though the second
season became its own show.
Yeah. I watched like 10 episodes. I remember this very clearly.
We had this conversation last week.
Yeah. We haven't had the conversation before, but, It's 10 episodes and I didn't laugh. So I gave it as much as I'm ever going to give it. I keep hearing the second season's really where it kicks off. Cool. I'm done. I'm not doing it again. Like, there's too much TV to watch.
And then my movie choice is going to be The Three Musketeers, the 1993 Disney's Three Musketeers with all that awesome cast of Charlie Sheen.
Kiefer Sutherland's in that one.
Sutherland and
Robin. Right? Is it Rob? Chris O'Donnell?
Chris O'Donnell was in it. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
You know, I'm forgetting the guy who played Porthos at the moment, his name, but that movie Oliver Platt. There we go. That movie right there is a lot of fun. And I like the relationships that those four characters end up having and then building, because when D'Artagnan shows up, they have to add him into the fold. And everything about it is just great. You know, the fact that they, no matter what, have each other's back, no matter how stupid or how ridiculous that the fight they get themselves into, they're going to do it. And they respect each other when they're about to get into a fight that's way over their head. And, you know, everything about it. One of my favorite lines is something that Porthos gets to say with, you know, don't be ridiculous. Of course, we're going to resist. You know, I just love that. The fact that one person could speak to the fact that they were all going to fight for each other was great.
It's a good choice. I like that. I don't love that movie, but I like that movie quite a bit. I remember it being a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I think Oliver Platt, too. He's a fun actor. For me, movies, look, I don't really think either one of these is going to be a huge surprise, but movies, Riggs and Murtaugh, they are my go-to movie friendship. It's what I base every buddy comedy on, is can you rise to the caliber of Riggs and Murtaugh, of Martin Riggs Roger Murtaugh, because, you know, the first movie, Lethal Weapon, they begin as this very anti-relationship. They do not like each other, or they seem to not like each other. And through the course of the movie, you understand Riggs's plight. Murtaugh begins to understand Riggs's plight. And it isn't just about the violence. It's about knowing the pain that's in that guy. And I love, love, love the leap they take from Lethal Weapon 1 to Lethal Weapon 2, because it shows like a real growth of a friendship. It's not, he's not still this guy just going through misery every day. Like, he's found a family. He's found a friend. He's found meaning in his life. And it's with his friend. Like, they just, they've come to love each other. And there's a moment in Lethal Weapon 2, which is kind of like the best description of men's friendships I've ever seen, is where, you know, Murtaugh's on the toilet and he thinks he's about to die, and he's going to tell Riggs that he loves him, and they don't have to say it. They just, he starts to say, and he goes, I know, you know, they just get each other, because that's how guys are, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it. I thought that was a beautiful friendship throughout the course of the movies. Say what you want about the quality of the films themselves, you know, the fourth one's up or down, whatever, but I love their relationship. It's the best one in film in terms of friendship, my opinion. Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
Yeah, total thumbs up on that. It's a good choice. I love those two characters. And you're absolutely right. And those two end up are becoming their own little family and living each other within each other's lives in such a way that's almost intrusive. It's awesome.
Now, for TV, I want to be clear. My best friendship in television is not Sean and Gus from Psych. I love that show. I love their relationship. But I think I need to clear this up, because I think Sean has never been as good a friend in that show as Gus is.
That's very true.
So to me, I can't in good conscience pick them, because most of the show, I'm like, be a better friend. This guy is the best friend you could ever want or need or have. And you are still selfish most of the time, you know? So, okay. Well, good. We're on the same page. I hope.
Yeah, we're totally on the same page. Like, Sean makes that show hard to watch sometimes, because you're like, what are you doing?
Okay. I'm still enjoying
JD and Turk are never Sean and Gus, because JD and Turk were always buds the whole time.
That's true.
Well, they're definitely better friends. How about that?
Yes. No, they really are.
But my pick for best friendship on TV is Willow and Xander from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's my favorite friendship. Is that making you come around a little bit?
No, it's an interesting take from you. I had to check to make sure you weren't Amanda for a second.
Yeah, it's
no.
I don't know what happened here.
I absolutely love their friendship. I really love how it grew from one had a crush a little bit at the very, very first season, and then it became, no, we've always just been friends, and we're the best friends. And then, you know, it all culminated in, was it season 6? Where Willow's on a bad path, and yeah, you could rival that with addiction. You could rival that with so many things that people go through, that, you know, struggles. And Xander never quits on her. So many people are just ready to give up on her because she's become downright evil in many respects. And he won't. He's willing to sacrifice his own life for her, because he knows that she's still the person that he loves her, that he believes her to be. And that's real friendship right there. Like, it's just, I think it's the best representation of friendship that's ever been on television. Doesn't get enough hype because it was kind of a cult show, but man, I love those two together.
I could disagree with that in any way, shape, or form.
Woohoo! And unlike Sean and Gus, like, they're both pretty selfless. You know, they care about each other. Just be there for Gus. Man, Gus deserves better. Like, Gus is the friend we all want, right? Just like the loyal, sweet guy that's really funny sometimes.
Sean makes him into a table. I mean,
the chocolate snowman.
Oh, so funny. All right. Now we're going to close it up with some listener comments. We put it in our Facebook group and asked people to give their kind of best example of love and TV, or what they think about love and television. And we're each going to pick one to speak to. So how about, I'm going to choose Deborah Mackey. Deborah said Adam and Christina Braverman from Parenthood, or, and this is the one that speaks to me, Phil and Claire Dunphy from Modern Family, because the Dunphys are hilarious. They're messy. They don't take themselves too seriously. And on occasion, they're so mushy that it kind of makes my teeth hurt. And that's pretty damn realistic, I think. I will agree. I just watched the entire series of Modern Family over the course of the last year and a half. Like, it's become my nighttime show. Claire and Phil, number one, I think Phil's the best dad ever, it seems like. I think I'm convinced he's probably the best dad on TV. And their relationship is so sweet and wonderful. And they're both funny as hell. They're the funniest people on that whole show. Great pick. I love that choice.
That's a really solid pick. I believe it's Deb Solomon Thomas. I think I got some of those right. Supernatural's Dean and Sam, the brothers. The entire series starts with them in their early 20s. Dialogue matches how brothers talk, fight, and just engage with each other. That's pretty true. I have one of those. Actually, we just spent a weekend together, and we still talk like that. Over the years, the respect grows while the insults decrease. That doesn't actually happen in brotherhoods, but go ahead. They mature perfectly. It's also something that doesn't happen with two brothers. There's still some toxicity. Definitely happens with brothers, but the series would be boring without some drama. Yeah, there's definitely no boredom in there. But yeah, I love those two in their relationship. It often reminds me of the relationship that I have with my brother, and how much I adore that relationship, and I love watching it on screen between these two.
It's kind of surprised they weren't your pick for TV.
I was branching out, my friend.
Branch out. You pick your best choice. That's the answer.
No, I was branching. I got my best choices. Right, I was just trying to get some. I wanted to go deeper in the well this time.
Hmm. But is that your choice, the Parks and Rec?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good solid choice.
Okay. I'm just saying, you talk about Supernatural like every 5 seconds. Very rarely do I hear you talk about Parks and Rec. That's all.
I am trying to talk about things that are not surface right now. I'm trying to expand.
It's deeper.
Right.
More meaningful. Gotcha.
More meaningful. It's I got to really dig for it. I got to really try instead of what just floats to the top.
All right, Troy, what do you got?
Well, I picked the Pearson family for my choice because Tabitha Grace picked mine. And so I wanted to give credit to Tabitha because Tabitha always adored Veronica Mars and her dad, Keith, especially since most TV dads aren't the greatest. It always spoke to me because I have a great relationship with my dad.
God, I love that relationship. It's one of my favorites too. If I was going like parent-child, just parent-child, that would probably be my pick.
That's like the number one TV dad-daughter, I think.
It's gotta be.
It's very close.
Should be. Damn it. Yeah.
Especially after what happens in the Hulu remake. What? I'm just kidding.
Man, that was a really good season two until the end, and it's like, what? Just happened.
And then they're not going to make any more.
What? God damn it. Oh, that's it. That's it for love. We're done. We're loved out. No more love left. I am loveless. You guys? Or are you still
tapped out?
Okay. Good.
I'm tapped out. No, I was tapped out when we started.
I'm full of love now because of all the love we just shared.
I'm going to go share some love and get some pegging going. So everybody, thanks for listening. Remember to share the show with your friends. If you love it, rate it. Review it, subscribe on Patreon and get some bonus content, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn.
This will be the last time you go to the theater. The popcorn was tainted.
What?
What is happening?
What are you talking about? What did you do to the popcorn? Is it because of the Deadpool bucket? They're going to Dune bucket that shit.
They're totally going
to. Yeah, everybody gets a hole in the bottom.
It is the Dune bucket, only you turn it upside down.